Y'all ready for today?
Yes.
It's going to be a flamethrower. Okay, you ready? With Jesus on the front, it's going to, anyway. Today we are actually in part four of a series that we've been in for the past 3 weeks, and this is part four of Love Dates and Heartbreaks. And if you haven't been with us, or if this is the first time to tune in, this is a series for students who are dating, college students who are dating, graduate students, singles who are dating. If you are out of a marriage and you find yourself in this world where you're dating again and trying to figure out it's for you, if you're in a committed relationship or you're married, this is a series for you, because we've discovered all kinds of cool things about how to make relationships, existing relationships, better. And as I've said throughout the series, it's an opportunity for me to talk about something that breaks my heart. Because very few things break my heart like watching people make relationship decisions that undermine their relationships, that undermine their current relationships, or perhaps undermine a future relationship they don't even talk about. So it's Love Dates and Heartbreaks. We've talked so far about love. We talked about Jesus' brand new brand of love, not the do unto others as you would have others do unto you, or love unto others as you would have others love unto you. A brand new kind of love where Jesus said, I want the love that you display and that you dispense on others to reflect the kind of love I have had for you. And when he said this, it didn't make a lot of sense to his first century followers, but after the crucifixion, it made all the sense in the world, because he laid down his life for them. And he said, now, when you think about loving other people, I want you to take your cue not from other people, I want you to take your cue from me. It's an as I have done unto you, you are to do unto others kind of love. And if that's all he said, that would really be about all we'd need. The Apostle Paul said it this way. He said, have the same attitude toward one another as Lord Jesus Christ had. In your relationships to others, Paul said, in your relationships to others, have the same mindset that Christ had. Again, do we really need anything else? We know how much Jesus loved the people around him. But the Apostle Paul came along, as we know, and he teased this out. And he gave us the fine print that will make you what? Fine, that's right, the fine print that will make you fine. He said, this is what this actually looks like in an actual relationship. He said, the love that God has displayed to you and put on display to you through Jesus, that he wants you now to put on display through others, looks like this. It's patient, it's kind, it's not jealous or arrogant or honoring. It's honoring, it's selfless. It's not easily angered, it's not a scorekeeper. If you were here last time we were together, we talked about scorekeepers, and I know some of you had conversations later about that. I heard about some of those. That this kind of love is protecting, it's trusting, it's hopeful, and it's persevering. And so Paul teases these out. He says, this is what this kind of love looks like. And it's so important. If you missed any of the previous episodes, these past two where we looked at these words are so important for you to go back and watch. You can do that by using your church app, or you can go to my YouTube channel. All these messages are there, because today we build on where we've been. So we've talked about love. We've talked about love. And today we're going to talk about dates. And I want to go ahead and give you the bottom line today of today's message up front, in case you lose interest or leave or your power goes out at home. And the bottom line is simply this. If you don't want a relationship, if you don't want a relationship like the majority of relationships, don't date like the majority of daters. If you don't want a relationship like the majority of relationships, if you don't want a marriage, if you don't want a marriage in the future like the majority of marriages you've seen, in fact, one of the reasons perhaps you're putting off marriages is you've just never seen a good one. You've never seen one you wanted to be in, because they all look like you would be stuck in them, and you don't want to be stuck. Well, if you don't want a marriage like the majority of marriages, then don't date like the majority of daters. Now, the Apostle Paul, who we left off with last time, set us up for today's discussion, because at the end of that extraordinary chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the love chapter, at the very end, he said something very personal, and again, it teases us up for where we're going today. And you may remember this, and if you weren't here with us last time, you've probably heard these words before. Here's what he said. He said, when I was a child, I talked like a child. And I thought like a child. And when I was a child, I actually reasoned like a child. But then I grew up. And when I grew up, I did what grown-ups are supposed to do. When I grew up, when I became an adult, I put behind me, or I put away the ways of childhood. I put the ways of childhood behind me. Now, all of us understand this in terms of, there are things you just don't do the way you used to do them, because you grew up and you naturally put the ways of childhood behind you. You're not childish anymore. But for some reason that I can't explain, maybe somebody smarter than me can, for some reason in our culture when it comes to dating, it's like we have all reverted back to childhood. And the whole culture of dating has become so childish. But that's not the term we use. In fact, all of the blogs and the rants and the articles about dating, nobody talks about childish behavior. The word that our culture has chosen to describe dating in the 21st century is this word, the word complicated. They say, dating is complicated. Dating is just so complicated. Here's a few quotes to kind of set our direction for today. Benjamin says this, "Online dating is the worst. Each time I ask friends ranging from early 20s to their 40s how the temperature in the dating pool is, I'm met with borderline hostility. For all," he continues, "for all the talk of ease that a dating app allows for a potential date, the impression I'm left with is everyone is swimming in a pool they all took a dump in." He's not done. "Instead of shocking the water and getting out, everyone decided they needed to keep swimming in the sewage, perhaps even adding to it, because that pool is where people swim. In other words, what option do we have? It's a mess. It's horrible. But hey, if you're going to date, these are your only options. This is your only approach." Shawnee says this. She said, "I saw a meme once that read, it used to be, how long do we date before we have sex? Now it's, how long do we have sex before we date? Before this is actually a relationship." Aiden writes this. "We don't communicate our feelings to one another, but instead play this guessing game with no intention of being with that person, because it means you care and you're weak. Because whoever cares the least wins." Right? One more. Rebecca writes this. She says, "I'm definitely as much to blame as any of the men I meet. I'm often unwilling to make space in my life a relationship needs in order to thrive. Maybe this will all change when I meet the right man, the right person." Now, today I'm going to lean a little hard, and I had a lot of people look at my outline, and honestly, everybody that looked at it went, you better take that out. You better take that out. So it got shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And I understand that because as I said up front, this is the issue that breaks my heart. And so I tend to get a little bit amped up about it. And I don't want to over-communicate, but I don't want to under-communicate, because this is a big, big deal. And here's the challenge from my perspective. When you take something that's designed for an adult, when you take anything that's designed for a grown-up, and you hand it to a child, it appears to that child to be complicated. When you take something that's designed for an adult and you hand it to a child, from the child's perspective, it appears to be complicated. And as long as you and as long as we and as long as culture approaches romance and sexual attraction and relationships like a child, it will be complicated. But it's not actually complicated, because children are naturally, what are children naturally? We were all one, we've raised them. Children are naturally impatient, self-seeking, self-centered, selfish, easily angered, easily distracted, ill-mannered, rude. They want to be held until they don't. I want to get down now and go over there and do that, right? They pout in order to get their way. So here's, my advice. We just need to grow up and quit acting like children in our dating culture. And it's easy for me to say because I'm married, but I look at what happens in our culture, what's happening in our culture, and we hear the aftermath and we hear the stories. And I just want to grab the culture by the shoulders and say, hey, you know how to do this. Just grow up. Let's put the ways, like we've already done in so many arenas of our life, let's put the ways of childhood behind us. Because if you don't, it makes one of the most fascinating, powerful, extraordinary things in the world too complicated. It makes it all unnecessarily complicated. And I would say to people in our culture, and it makes you as an individual unnecessarily susceptible to the right person myth. The version of the right person myth that says it doesn't matter how I treat the wrong persons, because when I meet the right person, I will become a better person. That it doesn't really matter how I treat her, because I'm not going to marry her. It doesn't matter how I treat him. I'm not going to marry him. I said, it doesn't matter what I do in this particular season of my life because I don't plan on getting married in this particular season of my life. It doesn't really matter what I do in graduate school because I'm going to get my career going. And then after my career, I'm going to settle down. So it doesn't matter how I treat these guys. It doesn't matter how I treat these women. It doesn't matter. I'm on my way going somewhere. And when I meet the right person, I'm going to settle down. But between now and then, it doesn't matter. Because I'll become a better person. When I meet the right person, I'll become a better person. You won't. It doesn't work that way. And you will have missed the season of your life that you have to prepare for that day. And if you miss it, you miss it, and it's gone. You'll just be on your better behavior. You'll be on better behavior for a while. And this whole thing leaves you, again, it just leaves you unprepared. It leaves you unprepared because you will not have taken the opportunity to exercise your relationship muscles. You have to exercise them. Now, some of you were forced to exercise your relationship muscles growing up because you grew up in a home where your parents forced you to exercise your relationship muscles. And if so, you're ahead of most people. I hope you take advantage of that preparation. But some of you weren't. Or some of you were, but you just walked away from it and said, that's just so old-fashioned. And my parents, you know, they live in a small town. They don't really know what's going on. I don't think that really works in the real world. But the truth is, to prepare for the future, to be prepared for the future, you have to prepare. And here's the thing. Dating, actual dating, is exercise. Dating is preparation. Actual dating actually requires something of us. Dating is risky. Dating the right way is healthy because it is preparation. Dating, come on, let's face it, it surfaces our greatest fears. Sometimes it certainly surfaces our greatest insecurities and some of our greatest anxieties. So it's no wonder that people want to avoid actual dating and look for a substitute or a workaround. A substitute or a workaround that won't force you to exercise your relationship muscles, your courage muscle, your self-control muscle. Do you know where you learn self-control? You learn self-control when you have to use self-control. When you don't have to have self-control anymore, you don't exercise your self-control muscle. Now is the time that you exercise your self-control muscle for the future. Did you know that? You exercise your courage muscle, your self-control muscle, your honor muscle. You gotta use that thing, right? And your plan and prepare. All of these are necessary for an actual relationship. Now, as we've seen so far in our time together, when it comes to relationships, the New Testament is extraordinarily helpful. It's immensely helpful. When it comes to relationships, the New Testament is great because in the New Testament, we find this overarching command that Jesus gives us. In the New Testament, we find all of these applications of Jesus' overarching love as I've loved you command. But when it comes to dating, not so much, okay? There's no dating advice in the New Testament or the Old Testament because back then, married people were committed to each other or promised to each other by their parents, and so there was no dating culture. There was no adolescent culture. There was no singles culture. Back in all ancient times, women guarded their virginity like they were guarding their life because they were, in most instances, having to guard it to guard their life and to guarantee themselves a future of any kind. It was an honor-shame culture. Dignity was not determined by the fact that you were a human being. Dignity was determined by who you were related to, what nation you had citizenship in, and how much money you or your family had. And then Jesus came along. This is why everybody should be a Jesus follower. Everybody should be a Jesus follower because Jesus came along and introduced for the first time in a holistic way dignity for the entire world and everyone who's ever born. It's through Jesus is the one that argued for or paved the way for human rights. Did you know that? For women's rights, for children's rights, for minority rights. But with all of that having been said and done, and with all the instructions we find in the New Testament, he didn't, and no one in the New Testament said anything about dating. So from this point on in the message, this is not thus saith the Lord. It's just thus saith me. Okay? So these are my opinions. These are my insights, but they're not insights from a vacuum. They're insights from years and years and years of talking to people who've done it right, done it wrong, who've navigated it successfully, 31 years of marriage and 31 years of talking to people who've been married and done it the right way and the wrong way. So I believe what I'm about to tell you is extremely, extremely important, but I just want you to know, no scientific research has been done. This is pretty much my opinion. You got that? So I don't expect anyone to take any notes. Now, I got to lay the groundwork. And again, I said I was going to push a little bit. So I'm going to start with this. To set the stage for these five rules for dating, I need to say something to the ladies. Ladies, it is an embarrassing fact about men, and I'll just own this. It is an embarrassing fact about men and male nature that relationally speaking, not at work, not on the softball field, you know, not on the basketball court, but relationally speaking, if we don't have to, we won't. If we don't have to ask you out, we won't. It's just too scary, okay? Ladies, if you step in, most of us will step back. It's embarrassing. It's not an excuse. There's never an excuse for bad behavior, ever. There's never an excuse for poor leadership in a relationship or in the home. There's never an excuse to mistreat anyone, ever, ever, ever. But this is just a terrible fact of male human nature for most males. And I'll tell you a secret about us, ladies, and you may not believe this. We know this about ourselves, even though perhaps the men in your life have not put words around it. We know this about ourselves, and we don't like it about ourselves. And we fight it. And we cover it with all kind of weird words and ego and macho and strange things. I mean, your husband's 40 years old. He's still on a softball team. You're trying to figure this out. It's like he comes home, his leg's all bloody, and he's talking about it. And you're thinking to yourself, this doesn't even matter. I mean, you're so mad about something that doesn't matter. What's up? So we're different, okay? We're just different. You find that funny? You might have found that a little too funny. Oh, he plays softball? Yeah, no. Other things. Okay, all right, we'll keep going. Sorry. That's what you get for sitting on the front row, but I'm glad you're here. So, guys, let me just say this. If I'm not talking about you, if you're like, man, Andy, you're maybe you, but not me, good. I'm so proud of you. If you are winning over this thing in you, congratulations. If you're a dad, you have to win in this area because you've got to model this for your little girls and you got to model this for your little boys, right? And that means you have to step up and make decisions and not step away when somebody steps in and not just forego that whole, you know, engaging relationally. When Sandra and I were engaged, we went to a class for premarital couples and a couple taught it and they were amazing. And the guy, the gentleman, his name was Rick. And Rick would say, men, if your wife says to you, do you want peas or carrots for dinner? You say, peas. Peas. Don't say, I don't know, I don't care, you decide, I don't know where I'm at. He says, no, you say peas. So through the year, in fact, he had us all say it, peas. So through the, Sandra's here, she'll tell you, so through the years, you know, it's in me. She's like, Andy, do you want it? And I start into my passive, I don't care, I don't know, now work, you know, I want to be at home, I don't care. And then I catch myself and I say, peas, peas, peas. And it's my way of saying, okay, give me a second. I'm going to decide. I'm not doing that thing. Peas. And we just kind of laugh, all right? So, got it? Any questions so far? We're all together. Okay, so that's kind of the groundwork. There's this dynamic that just goes on that women you've seen and wonder what's wrong with them and us. We fight it, and sometimes we cover it well, and we don't love that about ourselves. But it's just in most of us. So with that as the ground, it's sort of the, you know, laying the groundwork. Here are five rules for dating. Ready? Number one, guys. Ask girls on dates. The guys are like, why are they clapping? Use the word date. I would like to take you on a date too. No more, hey, you want to hang out? Hey, you want to do something sometime? Ladies, aren't you sick of that? It's like, yes, make a decision. Come on. Because men, again, and you know that we don't do this on purpose. Here's the thing. Clarity is honoring. Clarity shows respect. Ask a girl, ask a woman to do something specific on a specific day at a specific time. To which, when I hear that, if I'm sitting where you are and I hear that, here's what I think as a guy. That means like I have to plan. Exactly. You need to exercise your planning muscle. It's a muscle and you're going to need it, right? So guys, ask girls on dates. So I'm going to give you an example. And if you're, and ladies, if you're thinking, really, you have to give an example? Yes, because we're not that good at it. And guys, I'm going to give you an example that doesn't even use the word date, but you should not be afraid of the word date. It's a good word. So here's what it looks like. I have tickets, planned to the Atlanta United match, something I'm interested in, next Wednesday specific. If you're available, because I'm going to give you an out, I would enjoy taking you. How's that? Let me go over it again. I thought ahead. Okay. Now, guys, let me tell you why this is a big deal. Because it has taken you weeks, maybe months, to get up enough courage to ask. Your landing, your glide pattern is long and slow. You've taken all this time. You got your friends praying, you know, and everybody, you're ready. And then now she has, how much time have you given her? Zero time. So when you are prepared and you are specific, it honors her by giving her an option to decide. So be clear, work that courage muscle, work that clarity muscle, honor her with options. That way she can stall. She can check her calendar. She has now the space and time that you've already had. This is how you honor a woman, by asking her to do something specific. It's a big deal. You've had time to think and worry. Now she has time to think and worry and call her friends, and they're all going to pray, right? Got it? That's rule number one. These are deep. I'm going to go slow. Ready? Rule number two. Ladies, agree to date. Don't agree to hang out sometime. Don't agree to, agree to dates. Here's the why. Because the bar is set on the first encounter. Not that bar, the other bar. The bar is set on the first encounter, okay? And you're worth it. You're worth it. In other words, if the bar isn't set high, it's not going to get any higher, and it's not our fault. It's just kind of our nature that at whatever level you'll receive us, we just kind of stay there. It takes a long time for us to improve, a long time. So you want to make sure the bar is high, right? If he asks you to hang out, if he says, hey, you want to hang out sometime, you ask this question. You say, well, do you have something specific in mind? He won't. And if you say yes, he never will. It's just the way where most of us, many of us, are wired. And ladies, don't do this. Don't say, well, would you like to go to coffee sometime? Because then he'll say, when? And now you're asking him out. Okay? So, okay, and guys, if a woman pushes back and asks for specifics, listen, guys, come on. She's not being a, okay? Look up here. She's complimenting you. She's saying, you know what? I think you have the capacity to date. I think you have the capacity to plan. I think you have the capacity to show honor. So ladies, rule number two, don't bend and blend and pretend, because you'll lose yourself in the end. And you may miss him, but Kelsey was right. You'll miss you more. So be who you are and allow us and give us the opportunity to rise to the occasion. We have the capacity. We're just not accustomed to being expected to rise to the occasion and rise to our ultimate capacity. Now, guessing, because a lot of people look at this outline. Andy, it sounds like you're putting all the pressure on the women. No, that's the women feel like I'm putting all the pressure on the women. You have no idea what men feel right now. It's like we feel, I've just deflated them. I've just all put them, just, they all lost. They all lost. They're sitting on the bench. They didn't even get in the game. Okay. So ladies, my intention today is not to put all the pressure on you. The pressure is not on you. Okay. Guys feel like I'm making it more difficult for them. Ladies, here's the thing. And I don't want to push too far on this because, again, but this is so important to me. I just want you to respect yourself and to never, ever, ever get accustomed to someone disrespecting you. We've all seen where that goes. We've all seen where that goes. We all see where that leads. And I just don't want you to do that. And at the very outset of a relationship, you have some influence as to how high the bar is set in terms of where this relationship is going. And guys, I'm just challenging you to say no. And it's in me too, to say no to your childish ways and to grow up. Rule number three, I shouldn't even have to put this up here. Don't ever mistreat anyone. Even if they don't seem to mind being mistreated, because you're not taking your cue from them or their previous girlfriend or their previous boyfriend or their previous relationship. If you're a Jesus follower, I shouldn't even have to tell you this. Because if you're a Jesus follower, you are taking your cue from how God through Christ has treated you. And he does not mistreat you. And so you have no right and you have no flexibility. There's no margin to ever mistreat anyone. And to be specific, as we think about the dating culture and what happens in the dating culture in the 21st century, here's the thing. Don't lie. Don't lie. This is one of the basics, okay? Thou shalt not lie. This isn't rocket science. Don't lie unless you're a liar. Then you can't help it. But are you a liar? You're not a liar, are you? No, you're not a liar. So don't lie. And don't mislead. Don't mislead. You know who misleads? Cowards mislead. And you're not a coward. So don't lie and don't mislead. The truth is this, that truth, and this is hard for us, okay, because it's so uncomfortable. But I'm telling you, the uncomfortability of this dynamic, you are exercising a relationship muscle. That's what makes it uncomfortable. When you wear out a muscle, it's uncomfortable. You're going to wear out the truth muscle. You're going to wear out the transparency muscle. You're going to wear out the courage muscle. It's all preparation. It is okay. The truth hurts, I should say. Truth hurts less than betrayal. Hurtful truth, you know, telling somebody the truth, it's actually honoring. Trying to save someone's feelings is actually demeaning because it says to them, I don't think you can handle the truth. I don't think you can handle someone being honest with you. Hey, that's none of your business. You honor them by telling them the truth. It communicates that I believe you can actually handle this, right? It's okay. This is tricky. I want to be clear. It is okay to hurt someone's feelings. It is not okay. Again, this is under the canopy of don't mistreat anyone. It is not okay to avoid hurting someone's feelings to protect yourself from the discomfort of telling someone the truth. It's uncomfortable. That's a muscle. That's exercise. That is preparation for a long-term relationship where you have to have difficult conversations, but you stay in the relationship. You have difficult conversations, but you've grown up enough and you've matured enough to be able to handle it coming your way and going the other way as well. Because uncomfortable conversations require courage. So be courageous. So don't ever mistreat anyone, even if they don't seem to mind being mistreated. Number four, and don't allow yourself to be mistreated. You are too good for that. Oh, so I guess you're too good for that. I am too good for that, yes. That's not arrogant. That is agreeing with what your heavenly Father says about you, and he knows. He says, you're fine because you're mine. And don't allow anyone to treat you less than fine because you belong to the creator of the universe. Yes, you are too good for that. Don't allow yourself to be mistreated. A couple weeks ago after the second installment of this series, a woman came up and she said, Andy, I heard what you said about not staying in a relationship where you're mistreated or where you're disrespected. And I'm in one of those relationships, but Andy, I love him. What do you do when you love him? I said, you get out of the relationship. Because if you stay in it for too long, that will become the new normal for you. And your heavenly Father doesn't want that to be the new normal for you. You are better than that. Don't put up with it. Just don't put up with it. You're not helping anything. You're hurting the other person. You're hurting yourself, potentially hurting your children or future children. Just don't allow yourself to be mistreated. I know it is so easy for me to stand up here and say that, but it's absolutely true. And how do you know if it's mistreatment? It's very simple. If you saw someone treat your daughter or your son, if you saw someone treat your younger brother or your younger sister, if you saw someone treat your niece or your nephew or your single mom the way that that person is treating you, and it would upset you if somebody treated those people that you love the way this person is treating you, then if you would be upset if somebody treated someone you love that way, then you should be upset if somebody treats you that way. If you would be upset if somebody mistreated your daughter and the person and they did to your daughter and treated your daughter the way the person you're in a relationship with is treating you, if that would upset you about another person, it should upset you when it's you. It's not different. It feels different. It looks different. You think, well, but it's the same. You know what this looks like. So please, whatever side of the relationship, just don't allow yourself to be consistently mistreated. That will become your new normal. And it's not normal. And your Heavenly Father and the people who know you and love you don't want that to become normal for you. And then number five, last one. We talked about this the first week. Don't do anything that makes you a liar for life. See, here's the thing. Every relationship you're in, every date you go on, every, you know, romantic encounter you're a part of, all of those events become part of your story. Every single one of those events becomes a permanent part of the story of your life. And we don't think in terms of writing a story. We just think in terms of on Friday and the next month and then last summer. We think in terms of events. But every single event, every encounter, every decision, every relationship becomes a permanent part of the story of your life. And I want you to write a story that you're proud to tell. I want you, when you think back on a current relationship or a previous relationship or a future relationship, when it's in the rearview mirror, when it's a permanent part of your story, don't you want to write a story that you're proud to tell? Don't you want to write a story that if you're ever asked, you'd be proud to tell the whole story? And here's the thing, you will be asked. You will be asked. And if you're not careful, you will become a liar for life because there will be seasons and chapters and relationships that you don't want anyone to know about and that you kind of skim over and it's really nobody else's business, but you carry it with you as a permanent part of your story and there's nothing you can do about your past. But from this moment on and from this moment forward, you have an opportunity to write a different dating script, a different moral script, a different relationship script. And a good story is, for years I wandered around and kind of gave into cultural expectations, but then there was a specific date when I made a specific decision, and since that time, I have written a newer, better story. Don't do anything else that makes you a potential liar for life. You're writing the story of your life. You have an opportunity from this moment forward to write a really good one. Now, if everything I've said so far seems like, okay, Andy, the rumors are true, you live in a closet. They bring you out on Sunday and wind you up and you na 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 and you know, and then the battery runs out and they put you back in the closet because you have no earthly idea what's going on in culture. Here's my suggestion. This afternoon when you go home, or tonight when you go home, or whenever you get home, I want you to get an empty cardboard box. Now, if you don't have one, just wait a couple days. Because a box is going to show up on your front porch or in your garage, and you don't know what it'll be because you can't remember what you ordered. But anyway, after you get it all out, you'll have an empty cardboard box. And I'm serious about this. And I want you to find some time when you can be alone, and I want you to stare into that empty box, and I want you to do a little mental exercise. I want you to take all the good things. I want you to take all the good things that you've accumulated mentally, from binge dating, hookups, lying your way in, lying your way out, pregnancy test, can't remember exactly, guilt, shame, heartbreak, embarrassment, and stories you hope no one ever finds out about. I want you to take all the good things that have come from this, and I want you to put them in that box. And what do you have? You don't have anything, right? You've added all up, and the sum total of all of that is, in some cases, just a past that you're going to lie about. Or a past that, or things you hope no one finds out about. Or a past that is not going to serve you well in the future. A past that not only doesn't prepare you for the future, it becomes a drag to the future. A past, and we're going to talk about this next week. Don't miss next week. A past that you're going to be tempted, and this breaks my heart, that you're going to be tempted to smuggle into your future. But it's not going to stay hidden forever because those kinds of things never do. A past that you wouldn't wish on your sons or daughters or nieces or nephews. And when you look at all the stuff in that box, would you want that for the people that you love? And if not, grow up. Let's grow up. And would you be willing to put your childish selfish, short-sighted ways behind you. My advice is that you just don't put anything else in that box. And you get a new box, and you start over. And here's what you'll discover. That following Jesus in the realm of romance and following Jesus in the arena of personal relationships, that following Jesus in that area will almost instantaneously make your life better and make you better at life. Because following Jesus in this area of your life will prepare you and protect you. It will prepare you because he loves you. And it will protect you because he loves you. So, if you don't want a relationship like the majority of relationships, don't date like the majority of daters. In fact, you may need to take a break from the entire scene. And we will pick the discussion up right there next time in part 5 of Love Dates and Heartbreaks.